Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and we have covered the Keystone XL pipeline intensely in this program for a number of years. And we also the news, we're all very aware of the news that President Barack Obama denied its entrance into the United States, at least through the North. And we're going to talk about what that means and with people who have been involved in this and what this struggle around the environmentalists has meant and why we think this happened the way it did. Antonio Yuhas joins us. Once again, it's been a while since he's been with us. Investigative reporter, author of The Tyranny of Oil. Antonio, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
And Daphne Weishman, an associate fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies, where she is the founder and co-director of the Sustainable Energy and Economy Network. Daphne, welcome. Good to have you back with us as well.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us at talk@steinershow.org. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner, but do call if you can, 410-319-8888. So, you know, people debated whether or not this decision would be made, the way it was. But in all those years, Antonio, of covering this, I'm curious what your analysis of what this veto really means.
I think it's a very significant rejection of Keystone's application. It's the result of 7 years worth of effort of people across Canada and the United States who opposed the pipeline, and that's people who lived on the route that the pipeline would take, as well as those concerned about the greenhouse gas implications, and as well as those concerned about continuing production out of the tar sand region of Canada. So, you know, the rejection of the pipeline attests to all of that effort, and also attests to the fact that we are seeing already, for example, that Shell said in late October that it was canceling a project that it had begun in Alberta, which is the place where the pipeline would start. One of the reasons being was that it, because of infrastructure concerns, that it wasn't clear if it was going to be able to get the oil out because of the lack of certainty about the pipeline. So the lack of the pipeline has already had production impacts. And then the EPA found in its analysis of the pipeline that not having it would reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 17% over having it. So it's also, you know, going to have an impact on greenhouse gas emissions.
Daphne, and I know you've been in the middle of the struggle as well here around this for a long time. Your analysis.
Well, I see this as a huge victory for social movement. You know, what started as a movement that was underway in Canada with First Nations communities fighting what was an incredibly toxic and deadly industry in their backyard, expanded all along the route of the pipeline and ultimately across the country, where you have people out in Oregon, where I am right now, who consider themselves part of the struggle, all up and down the coast. People know that the moment has arrived where we need to draw a line in the sand. And, you know, there are detractors who will say, well, the tar sands will get there by some other route. And while that is true for now, this is, I think, the beginning of the end of new fossil fuel infrastructure. In fact, that is essentially what we are fighting and winning here in Portland, Oregon. We're about to pass the strongest language on fossil fuel infrastructure in the nation. The mayor has submitted a resolution for no new fossil fuel infrastructure, and we expect it to pass. We hope it will pass on Thursday. And we're going to be making the call up and down the West Coast for the same thing. No new fossil fuel infrastructure. Why? Because we have arrived at a point in time where 80% of proven reserves must remain in the ground, and all unproven reserves must remain untouched if we're going to have a chance of avoiding very dangerous and possibly catastrophic levels of climate change. So without action by our government officials, people are taking matters in their own hands. And there is massive resistance to expanding any new fossil fuel infrastructure.
So, and pick up on that point, Antonia. I mean, one of the things that play devil's advocate for a moment here with this. I mean, I've saw articles that just were printed about another oil tanker in Wisconsin derailing.
train.
Right, the train, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then you hear the other articles about how Exxon knew about global warming and kind of kept on pushing because they wanted to make oil profits, but also now you're seeing them invest in alternative energies. But the largest package here, so this pipeline's been stopped, but what does all that together really mean?
There is an enormous flow of oil back and forth between the United States and Canada right now. So the country to which we export the most oil is Canada. The country from which we import the most oil is Canada. So there's oil already moving back and forth in pipelines, in trains, in barges. Not having the Keystone Pipeline has probably meant an increase in other routes of movement. But what that has shown us is that all of those routes have problems. So mm-hmm. we're seeing trains derail, pipelines burst and leak and spill, barges run into things and they spill as well. And so what that means is, one, we have a big problem, obviously, with regulation, but also, you know, there's going to be a problem whichever way we move this stuff. And that's why most of the people who opposed the pipeline, their ultimate demand is actually something that President Obama said in his statement against in explaining why he was rejecting the pipeline, which was that ultimately, if we're going to keep large parts of the earth from remaining habitable, we're going to need to keep fossil fuels in the ground. And that's Obama's words. And that's what people have been opposing the pipeline also say. So that ultimately the decision is going to have to be, how do we hit the point of production? But you really need to address all of these problems at the same time, unfortunately, because they're all happening at the same time. So one of the things you do is stop building pipelines. The other thing you do is start addressing production at the source. You start reducing the amount of movement by train. You reduce the amount by barge. You actually put in restrictions and regulations on how the oil industry can operate. One of the reasons why the price of oil is so low right now is that the oil industry is actually reaping what it's sown. What began under the Bush administration and continued under the Obama administration, which was really just this free hand in where the companies could operate, which has led to the second largest domestic oil boom in U.S. history, means that we're awash in oil. There's too much of it, too much from an industry perspective and certainly too much from a climate and environment perspective. And what that means is that oil has to start staying in the ground. And Obama actually has started to do that piece as well. So in Alaska, he also recently has basically taken off of the table for at least the next several years offshore drilling in the U.S. Arctic. That's taking a chunk of oil and basically taking it off the table. And in the long run, to address all the problems with trains and pipelines and barges, we're going to have to reduce the oil at the source.
Daphne, so taking that to the next logical step. So, I mean, what does that mean for energy? I mean, this is, you're dealing with Exxon, Mobil, Shell, the rest, who are hugely powerful corporations on this planet. Not just here in the United States, but, you know, are exploring oil all across the world. That oil is going to be transported. And India and China want that oil, as well as America wants to make money on that oil. So, I mean, just talk a bit about what that says. So how and many people in America are fairly ambivalent about this by all the polls. So where does this go next?
Well, you know, I think what we're beginning to see is the social license that we've allowed corporations like Exxon to operate under. We just assumed it's in our best interest that they keep producing oil indefinitely. That social license is now under scrutiny. We've got ExxonMobil now being investigated for lies by the New York Attorney General. We're seeing other attorney generals exploring similar investigations throughout the country. We have members of the Senate also calling for a federal investigation of whether or not they violated the RICO statutes as the tobacco industry did. I think we barely even have time to digest just how rapidly things are changing because they have to change. The climate science requires a major about face. And I think we're going to be seeing much more strong commitments coming out of the Paris climate talks. What's on a table right now doesn't get us anywhere close to the climate goals that we need.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see what additional commitments come out in the next week or so. But regardless, what we're going to see at the end of the Paris climate negotiations is people's movements all over the world are going to be pushing for far more than what's on the table, which will get us to essentially 4 degrees Celsius, which is over twice where we need to go in terms of temperature rises. We need to bring the temperature down as quickly as possible.
And Antonia Juhas, just in the last minute or so we have left here, I mean, I'm thinking about your book, the incredible book, The Tyranny of Oil. And I was pausing about the power of those corporations. I'm curious about your analysis of where this takes us from here, given that.
Yeah, I think there's, you know, a window right now, which is that the oil industry is taking in a lot less money than it has during previous times. And I think we're seeing a diminishment in their economic heft. You know, I think the Obama administration is making pretty significant moves that are certainly in line with the interests of environmentalists and people who are concerned about the climate, and not making moves that are in line with the oil industry, one reason being that the industry just doesn't, you know, at this particular moment, have the same level of influence that it has in the past. And that is a, you know, window of opportunity. Even among the Republican candidates, if you look at the presidential debate, energy is just not playing a role there. It has in the past. And I think that, you know, is a window that people who are concerned about these issues might want to take advantage of.
I mean, this is, as the talks take place over the next week or so, we look forward to really talking to you all more in depth for a longer conversation, because I think we're at a really interesting precipice here with this. And to see where we go, where this movement goes, what this battle for clean energy means, and where it might be taking us is going to be very critical. And I just thank both of you, both for your key work that you're doing in this regard, and for taking the time to join us here for this brief segment. But we'll look at it in greater depth. Antonia Juhas is an investigative reporter, author of the book The Tyranny of Oil. Daphne Weisham is an associate fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies, founder and co-director of the Sustainable Energy and Economy Network. And I want to thank both of you so much, and look forward to talking to you again very soon as the Paris talks unfold.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you both.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And I want to thank you all for tuning in and writing in today and making this show what it is. Without you, we wouldn't be on the air. And again, let me thank everybody in the past for doing our membership drive, for being so generous in your support of WEA, and so generous in your support for WEA during our programming. So we appreciate that as well. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Stephanie Mavronis and Mark Gunnery. Our engineers, Andre Melton. Our interns are Sienna Grease, Manifa Wilson, and Calvin Perry. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. Send me your thoughts about today's program to talk@steinershow.org. To podcast The Mark Steiner Show, share it with your friends, visit us on the web at steinershow.org, or listen to us via your favorite podcasting app. For your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.